Welcome to the Floor Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 10th of April, and I'm recording at 10:22 p.m., and that's British Summer Time here in London. Now, I'm speaking in a slightly lower voice. I'm not quite as gravelly, at least not so far here today. So, recovering from this little flu number, but helped by the spring weather here, and the spring in the markets. Okay, let's cover some of this first before going on and looking at the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And the first thing I want to do is just to run through a few statistics. I know statistics have been awfully boring, but this we're talking about percentage gains in various stock markets this year in US dollar terms. And as we all know, it's been a good week. So at the end of trading today, here's the Dow Jones up 1.3% for the year, the S&P up just over 2%, and the NASDAQ Composite Index, which has most of the tech, that's up nearly 5.5% on the year to date. Well, not a bad performance overall. But if we look at the European markets now, again, in US dollars, the Euro Stoxx Index, that's 50 of the biggest companies in Europe, that's up 6.25%. The UK is not doing so well, but it's slightly outperforming the Dow, up just under 1.5%. However, France up nearly 7.5%. Germany up over 10.5%. The Italian market up over 10%. The Netherlands up over 4.5%. Switzerland up over 7%. Now we go look at the Asian markets. I'm not going to do the whole world in here, as you'll appreciate. But starting with the Asian markets, the TOPIX Japan, the TOPIX Nifty 50, that's up to over 12.5%. The Nikkei 225 in Japan is up nearly 13.7%. The Hong Kong Hang Seng Index is up 15.6%. The Shanghai Composite is up 24.6%. Again, all in US dollars here. The H Share Index, the Hang Seng China Enterprise Index, is up 16.77%. Taiwan, which has been flat, but it's starting to move now, up 4.6%. South Korea up 8.9%. Australia starting to move again, up 3.6%. And India, the Nifty 50 is up 7.7%, and the Sensex up 6.7%. So some pretty solid gains. Thailand up 4.53%. I think you get the picture now here, that stock markets are really doing well overall. And where we are seeing most of the biggest gains, again in US dollar terms, that's coming from where we're seeing the quantitative easing, which is in full flow in Japan, and also within the European Union. And China has its own version of the same, which has been the most dynamic of all recently. Exciting times. Now, you know, we know that it will all end at some stage. Every good bull run does. But hey, this is still performing. A lot of people are still skeptical. And let's enjoy it and profit from it while paying attention and just running with the trends here. Okay, so what else can we discuss in here? How about what will happen be happening here later on this year. Now, if we get quite overbought, and we are certainly somewhat overbought here right now, you can certainly expect reactions and consolidations. But so far, these are still occurring within the overall upward trends for the markets that are performing. Also, a good indicator, we have not seen the late run catch-up play by the resources sectors, which has been such a feature of the maturing stages of bull markets in just about every cycle past, certainly through all the cycles that I have lived. And that's going back into the well, since I've been following the markets so closely, it goes back into the mid-1960s. So, the door is still open here. The monetary policy is still accommodative. Nobody's tightening with any real vigor here. We know the Fed, that's going to be the most important one in terms of tightening. We know that Wall Street's underperformance here, for the most part, is due to the strength of the dollar, which firmed again in here today. I'll talk more about that in a moment. And we also know that the U.S. has also been affected by its cold winter, now fortunately over, and that it has also been affected even more so, I would say, by the big slowdown in development activity in the shale oil industries. But nevertheless, Wall Street is edging up close to those highs. It did not break its 200-day moving averages on the recent tests that we've been seeing. And I'll give the upside the benefit of the doubt until we eventually see these overall upward trends broken. Okay, when might that actually occur, or what are we likely to see ahead? I think probably the Fed is fairly relaxed about interest rates, certainly while the dollar is so steady, and while U.S. growth is a little slower because of because of the factors that I mentioned just a moment ago, from the weather to the oil shale industry. We also know that people have been talking about and preparing themselves emotionally, at any rate, for that first interest rate hike, that it probably won't be any big deal. Markets might worry about it just before the event, and then rally afterwards. We will see. But still, the bull markets are in form, and just to repeat a crucial point, where we're seeing the really aggressively accommodative monetary policies, and that's Japan, the European Union, and also China right now. That's where we're getting the best performances, best relative performances overall. And China's made even more interesting by this switch, which the Chinese have facilitated, which means that Chinese mainland investors who previously could only invest in excuse me, their own mainland indices, such as the Shanghai A-Share Index, can now invest through Hong Kong. And the Hong Kong markets were much cheaper, as I've been saying, pointing out for months. And they are in a bit of a catch-up move here right now. Exciting stuff. I hope some of you, I hope a number of you are participating in those markets. Now, I think we will need to watch overbought conditions here somewhat. But the big factor overall is monetary policy. And the first interest rate hike is not going to create any kind of crisis for corporate America or the global economy. We have to watch out for some sort of overall unexpected scare. These, you know, that's the sort of thing that happens several times a year. Something will go on. Putin's been quite quiet recently. Thank heavens for that. Long may it last. But you know what I mean. Something will come along to unnerve markets a little bit. Although some of those ranting and raving fund manager, hedge fund manager bears have seemed to have gone a little bit quiet for a while. But they'll be back. But anyway, I think what we can say is that markets can always experience reactions and consolidations. That's part of the part of the business. Those occur quite frequently. We can, if people get frightened, we can get a bigger setback and correction overall. But can we get a big bear market? My short answer is no. Not against this background of globally accommodative monetary policies, unless something happens that temporarily overwhelms all other considerations and causes people to run for the hills. I'm just going to have a little drink here just to keep the voice under control. Okay. So, what about the medium to longer term for stock markets? And I think that with the usual proviso about yes, you know we will have choppy conditions from time to time. Markets do tend to climb a wall of worry overall. And evaluations, that's exceedingly important. Evaluations become overextended, then we're more vulnerable to sharp reactions. But the classic killer of a bull market is the monetary tightening, and I don't see that being on the immediate horizon. Could it become a factor next year? Yes, if we get faster growth than people are anticipating here right now. But we don't need to worry about that too much here today. Some factors I think that will keep central banks a little bit more relaxed than might otherwise be the case are, first, we have a lot of disinflationary and deflationary pressures. But my view, and I've said this for many months, is that a very considerable proportion of the deflationary pressures are created by technology. Now, that is mostly positive deflation. So, and who benefits most from this? Well, we all benefit from it, but corporations benefit the most of all. So they can make more goods more cheaply, more efficiently, and the autonomies, of course, the big multinational corporations can then market those all over the globe, and that's what they do. But that deflationary pressure, which I think most people hear deflation and they think, oh my God, this is going to be some sort of negative deflation of falling output prices and profits. Well, no, most of it is positive. The negative side coming from technology is that it does put downward pressure on wages, or it keeps wages from rising, or it slows rises, and it also replaces human employment. And that's going to be something that we will all see for the rest of our lives. And that gives governments even more incentive to stimulate their economies a little bit more so that no more jobs can be created for the people who actually need them. So that'll be a perennial problem, but it's not a crisis, is it? Because more people are able to find jobs. And hopefully that will long be the case. Now, The other big factor, which I feel is hugely important, is the lower energy costs. And that has been a boost here for the global economy. It's one of the reasons why I think that 2016 will be stronger for 2000 than 2015 on the basis of everything that we know right now. The benefits of lower energy prices are more diffuse initially. People aren't sure how long it's going to last. They save some of the money, they pay down debts with some of the money, and then eventually they spend a little bit more of that money, and that's what we're actually seeing. And I think we will see that reflected in growth as this year progresses and as we get into next year as well. The obvious exceptions for that are the major oil producers. These have all experienced currency devaluations of sometimes of quite significant degrees here overall. They are all producing more oil, except where we have widespread unrest, and they will pump out as much oil as they possibly can, and that's helping to keep prices lower overall. And the big factor is that technology really ensures that we're not going to see we're not going to see the OPEC led group led by the Saudis, of course, control what actually happens to oil prices. Their power and influence has been diluted, and that's a permanent change. It's not a temporary change. You know, when we think that one of the major factors that this happened was the U.S. shale oil production, well, most of the countries around the world could produce plenty of their own shale oil if they wanted to, and are not doing so here right now, for better or for worse. But it is a fact. Technology has altered the energy world, and then that's not only in terms of just producing shale, or more effective drilling, also for conventional oil wells, horizontal drilling. These are all very familiar themes for subscribers, I know. But then we're also getting the solar-led renewables, and that will be hugely important. And within the next 10 years, we will see graphene play a huge part in that. And again, lowering the costs and improving the efficiency of solar power facilities. So it's an exciting world. And it's a world that can support a secular bull market. And I've been talking about this now really since 2009, when people were very depressed. I was talking about it not because I thought people were depressed, but because two huge bear markets following the end of the last secular bull market, ending in 1999, 2000. Really, that was the whole adjustment period, and we're beginning to emerge from all that. So, I think that again, as investors, we need to be prudent. We need to look at the charts. We need to look at the valuations. We need to keep leverage under control. We need to be sensible. But I think that this is a great time to be an investor. And I'll still be saying that, I suspect, 10 years from now and 20 years from now. So let's enjoy it. Okay, now, what about these global government bond markets? Well, certainly, deflationary pressures are helping to keep those yields low. And we're also getting, of course, the quantitative easing buying of the bonds, which helps to keep the yields low. People are much more concerned, as I was saying a moment ago, about deflation than inflation, so that helps to keep the yields low. The thing is that the bond bulls really are, have been strolling down a cul-de-sac here, because we're certainly not going to see all these government bond markets go to negative yields. And where we see the negative yields, in other words, you're paying governments to give them their money, give them your money. That's only a very rare and temporary anomaly. And so that the next big push in interest rates from current levels will be higher. It's not something that is imminent, but it is something that is very likely to be seen over the lengthy medium term. Lengthy medium term is anything from 6 months to 2 years, 2, 3 years, and it will certainly be inevitable over the next decade or so. So I just again, I just hope that investors who are quite active in those bond markets, or who have large positions in those long-dated government bond markets, will be careful so that you don't experience too much yield erosion when the change occurs. And it will change probably with surprising speed. The real change, that is not just a fluctuation, is likely to be quite dramatic and persistent. And you don't want to be caught on the wrong side of that move. And that will be seminal when it actually occurs. It'll be a very, very important signal to keep an eye out for. Okay. What about these currency markets now? I've been saying recently that I thought, having seen so much volatility in currencies over the last 9 months, that we would probably see a lot less volatility in currencies going forward for the rest of this year. I do think that's likely to be the case. The most interesting thing that I'm keeping my eye here on right now is the US dollar index. It's mainly against European currencies, and that's pushed up, it's been pushing up every day this week, I believe, and is currently at 99.393. So that is certainly within striking distance of that all-time, not all-time, and the rally high that we saw at the beginning of the month, just up over that, or was it late last month? I think it was late last month, but it was up over the 100 level. I said I felt that the Fed would be intervening, and actually did intervene. Obviously, if they did, they did it. They certainly did not advertise it or mention it, and would not want to. And we've had those discussions in the last couple of weeks. Now, if we get a successful test of the higher side, in other words, if the dollar index is actually able to break up above that 100 level and hold that, and progress a little further to the upside, that doesn't totally invalidate the hypothesis that the Fed was actually involved, but it would at least suggest that even if the Fed was involved, that they were not drawing a line on the sand, that they would, or on the chart, that they were prepared to defend indefinitely. The more important point here, overall, is what might the impact be, And I think that would cause problems for the U.S. stock market. I mean, if people start extrapolating further dollar gains, then they'll start really lowering their estimates on earnings here once again. That would lead to more corrective phases on Wall Street that would unsettle some of the other stock markets over the short to medium term. So that's certainly a potential risk. Conversely, if we get a downward dynamic on Monday or sometime in the not too distant future, and we see instead of the dollar breaking up and extending its bull run, if it just pulls back in a further ranging consolidation phase, that would be good for Wall Street. And I think reassuring for global stock markets here generally. Okay, and among other currencies, the weakest ones, you know, those are the primarily resources producers. And that will remain the case. People talk about emerging markets having weak currencies, but the Chinese renminbi has barely changed on the year against the U.S. dollar. The Indian rupee is actually a little firmer than the U.S. dollar on the year. So, you can't generalize. You've got to take them one by one in here. And incidentally, that's good news for confidence in China and in the Indian stock market overall. Although India. India, as I've said in some of my earlier broadcasts, it did so very well last year. And during that whole run-up, the last 10 months here of Modi's government, that we should think of this as being more of a consolidation year than big gains overall. But nonetheless, the performances right now are certainly respectable on the year, and I maintain that this is a very significant bull market, and will repeat the point that I think it'll persist until well into the latter part of this term, as long as Narendra Modi is in charge. And He, in the latter stages of his term, if the poll ratings are lower, that would affect the market negatively. But that is certainly not a risk at this stage. And my view, I think Modi's the best thing that's happened to governance in India, and long may it last. India is an extraordinarily interesting prospect. Okay, what about the resources markets here overall? Well, I've talked a little bit about crude oil, and the views, as you know, from the oil industry are that we will see prices. Of course, significantly higher towards the latter part of this year. Now, I'd be wary of those forecasts. They will certainly be keeping their fingers crossed and very much hoping that's going to be the case. They could be right, but I do not assume for a minute that that's actually guaranteed in here. Let's actually see what happens. Something's going to have to give in terms of production, put it that way, for oil prices to move significantly higher. And by significantly higher, I'm talking about $70, $80. And I just don't see the potential to go back to the highs that we had seen last year and the year before here. And so I do think that the days of getting a massive spike in oil prices are gone forever. And that's a big comment, but that's certainly my view at this stage. There are going to be too many alternative energy sources and too many countries that can produce oil, whether conventional oil or even more importantly, shale oil. Now, again, crude is probably in a ranging support building phase to current levels, and those current levels, the WTI is at 51.71, and the Brent is at 57.94. Looking at some of the other commodities, the industrial metals have been a persistent weak spot for a very, very long time. Some of those actually improved a little bit in here today, including the U.S. copper, but this is at very depressed levels. 273.75 is the price as I look at that. It's in cents. U.S. copper price. And again, the same problem here. We have technology making production so much more efficient, and that has actually coincided with China really reinventing itself in terms of its economic activity, trying to become more of a consumer-led society. No bad thing that overall, but it does mean that they're consuming far less, far fewer metals than they were previously, or far smaller quantities of metals, I should say. In terms of the agricultural commodities, that's more in the hands of the weather gods than anything else. There's some risks in California for the agricultural commodities. And because of their very hot weather that they're having and the drought problems they have, it's a problem that I've been writing about a little bit here this evening. It's something that I think Californians can certainly deal with. They've just been slow on their desalinization, on the building and development of their desalinization plants, and they need to do more of that rather than hoping that the weather will change and that the snows will pick up in the mountains, or that they'll be able to import oil from elsewhere. They need to do what every other dry region does and build the desalinization plants. They're in a perfect place to do that with that big coastline. And they're also concerned about the energy costs of desalinization plants. Well, those are tailor-made for solar energy, and so it's a this is not problem without a solution by a long shot. But I'm talking about the commodities here overall. As far as precious metals are concerned, I've said again that they're reasonably fair value in my opinion, but more importantly, investors have plenty of other alternatives, and they are looking for yield. So that takes them to the stock market, takes them to some of the riskier bond markets overall. They haven't lost money in either of those areas, at least not in a serious way overall, since we've got secular bull markets, or sorry, we've got overall, we're still in pretty much a global bull market for most stock markets other than some resources producers. So there's been a lot of competition, is the point I'm trying to make. And that's so investors have not been flocking to precious metals, and there's no reason why they actually need to. Certainly in the lengthy medium term, currency will be a big influence here. And if the dollar were to move higher, I think it's more likely that the dollar pulls back and ranges, but if the dollar does pull back in range, that will be supportive to the metal prices, the precious metal prices. And conversely, if the dollar were to go much higher than I suspect over the remainder of this year, that would weigh heavily on the performance of precious metal prices in US dollar terms overall. And I think that pretty well covers all the bases here. I certainly hope it has. I thank you for your emails and interest. And I'll also mention, forgive me for mentioning this again, but it's 10 days till the next Markets Now session. We've got a good audience, but we can fit in a few more, and that would be lots of fun. I love to see subscribers there. I always enjoy those events, and I think you would too if you were able to come along. And I'm sorry that so many people are so far away from London that they are unable to attend these, but if that ever changes, I'm delighted to say we've got an English couple who live in Japan, but will be at the Markets Now this Monday a week from now. So, on that note, all the very best to all subscribers. Have a terrific weekend.